You're welcome back to hour two of the 9 to Noon Show here on Highland Radio. The first hour of the programme obviously dominated by that news that the Government and Health Minister Jennifer Carr-McNeill have agreed to develop two surgical hubs in the Northwest, one going to Sligo University Hospital, the other going to Letterkenny, along with a number of other developments, including 15 extra cancer oncology chairs that can be used for day treatments for people who have various cancers. And we heard there from Mr. Michael Sugrue, who is a surgeon and a consultant at the hospital, that that will allow other work be done on the grounds of Letterkenny University Hospital rather than requiring transfers down to Galway. A number of comments, obviously, in terms of that. Let's share some of those with you. Well done to Donegal on getting a reversal of a decision that made no common sense. Why did our doctors, TDs and citizens have to fight so hard to get this stupid decision changed? Now, I'm not sure, in fairness, there was ever a government decision to solely develop a surgical hub in Sligo. What the minister and the government always said was we were going to develop a hub in the Northwest and a decision hadn't been taken. The HSE had chosen that it was going to recommend that if there were to be one hub for the Northwest, it would go to Sligo. But I'm not sure there was a government decision. But that being said, let's hope we can now keep this model working for forgotten Donegal by our TDs, senators, statutory businesses and community sectors. Donegal must not be forgotten again. Another caller says, I'm so delighted Donegal is getting a surgical hub. Can I congratulate the doctors and consultants that came together to speak for the people of Donegal, and to Greg Hughes, who constantly highlighted the importance of Letterkenny getting the hub. He talked about it every day he was on, and he should also get great praise. And I can absolutely confirm, as someone who has worked with Greg for the course of 20 years at this stage, I mean, when Greg gets an issue like this, you know, into his, he runs with it, and he runs, and he is dogged, and he is determined to see it through. And in fairness to Greg, that is the case. That's also the case, by the way, with Caroline and Shannon, who are the producers of the 9 till Noon Show. And I think the three of those as a team, Greg obviously on air, Caroline leading the charge behind the scenes, the three of those together, Greg, Caroline and Shannon, make a fantastic team. And there is no doubt that that helped to focus minds on this whole issue. Caller saying, why is Donal fawning over a minister making the right decision? You would think he is a Fine Gael supporter. I can tell you, caller, I am not an anything supporter. I do not have a political party. I do not follow any particular party. I make my voting decisions based on the issues of the day and the statements of candidates. And I'm not fawning over a Fine Gael minister. I am welcoming the right decision being made and facilitating others in doing the same thing, if that's what they choose to do. Morning, Donal. We owe so much to the consultants and doctors from Letterkenny Hospital for getting this surgical hub to Letterkenny. It was them speaking out and meeting this minister that made this happen. To those doctors, we say thank you. They've done more than all the politicians put together. There is no doubt that what the doctors have done has been absolutely vital in getting this. And we played that clip from last year of Dr. Anya Keating there before the interview with the minister, where it was made quite clear that a surgical hub was the first of 5 points that they were seeking in order to address problems with the health service in the county. Caller says, Greg Hughes is the person that started the ball rolling with that interview with Marion Harkin. It's time she woke up. Now, what I would say about that is, in fairness, this debate has been ongoing long before the interview with Marion Harkin with Greg. In fact, if I am correct, and I do stand to correction on this, I think the interview with Marion Harkin came between the two meetings that the doctors had with the minister. I think they first met with the minister in May. The interview between Greg and Marion Harkin on the 9 till Noon Show, I think, was early June. And then the second meeting with the minister was shortly after that. So I think the surgical hub debate was on long before Marion Harkin spoke on the 9 till Noon Show with Greg. Fantastic news, caller says, Ray, the announcement of a surgical hub for Letterkenny. Well done to everyone who worked to getting this secured. I travel to Sligo every 6 weeks for an eye injection. Will this new surgical hub end my travelling? Because it's a horrendous journey. I can't answer that specific question. I know there is an oncology unit over in the St Connell's campus at the hospital. Now, I know there have been various changes at that unit over the past couple of years. I've had occasion to use that unit myself for other reasons. But in terms of whether this can get you not needing. A lot of this could be well down to staffing and recruitment and how they staff that particular unit. That remains to be seen. Certainly ask at the unit itself. It may be, and I hope it does, because the less travelling that has to be done, the better. Just another issue, just to go away from the hub for a moment before we take a quick break. Caller asks, could you find out, please, why the credit union in Letterkenny have stopped having car draws? Maybe I missed an email from the credit union. Did any members get a letter advising them of this? Staff don't know why it's happened. We don't get interest or dividends. And it was nice when someone won the car, caller asks. And we've got a response from Gordon down at the credit union. And it's quite simple. The board have not decided to stop the members' car draw. Plans are in motion to hold a draw before the end of this year. So there is a car draw coming up, I can assure you, caller. So if you're one of those who enjoys taking part in that credit union car draw, well, you will get your chance again, because there is one on the way. It's the 9th of Noon Show on Highland Radio. We're joined on the line now by Damien Tansey, who is the senior partner in Damien Tansey Solicitors. They've offices in Sligo in Dublin. He's also a senior counsel. Damien, good morning.
Good morning.
Damien, we learned at the weekend that you are taking a civil action on behalf of a number of the families bereaved in the Creasle explosion, and also a number of others who were affected directly by the explosion. First of all, can you tell us what the nature of this action is?
It's an action, obviously, in the cases where family members lost loved ones. It's called a fatal claim, or a fatal injury claim. And in others, it's personal injuries and nervous shock. They all fall within the category of personal injury actions. We're acting for several families, some of whom lost loved ones, and in other cases where significant and catastrophic injuries were occasioned as a consequence of the explosion. And we're also acting for a number of apartment owners. Six or seven of the apartment owners who lost their apartments as a consequence of the explosion. And the actions are against several entities. One of them is in liquidation, and because of that, we have to make an application in advance for the leave of the High Court to institute proceedings against an entity in liquidation. You cannot sue a liquidated entity, or an entity that is in liquidation, without the prior consent of the High Court. All of these claims were prefaced by claims that were made to the Injuries Board, the Injuries Resolution Board, and its predecessor, PIAB. Again, you know that you cannot prosecute, or you cannot even start a personal injury action without first getting the consent of the Injuries Resolution Board, which is the current name of that body. Previously, it was PIAB. So all of those claims were submitted to PIAB, and PIAB issued authorities allowing the applicants to proceed with their actions in the High Court, and that's what we have done. So numerous actions have been launched in the High Court, and they will be prosecuted vigorously against numerous entities, including the people who owned the premises.
What do you envisage will be the time frame for the cases to be heard and potential resolutions to be issued?
Well, each claim names several entities as respondents or as defendants, and the expectation is that each of those will be separately represented. And that gives rise to a circumstance where you have, in the case of each of our clients, several sets of pleadings, because each of them will be separately represented. Each of the defendants will file what's called an appearance. Each of them will file what's called a notice for particulars. That notice will be replied to. Each of them will file a defence, which is their response to the action. And then the action will be set down for trial. So because of the multiplicity of entities, and because it is envisaged that there will be significant discovery, these will be applications made on the part of the plaintiffs for discovery of documents in relation to the case and in relation to the explosion. That will prolong matters. But you can be assured, as is in keeping with our approach generally, those actions will be prosecuted with great vigour and great energy, and in order to bring them to a conclusion quickly.
This obviously is running in tandem with a ongoing Gartha investigation. There is no question that this will compromise the investigation, or vice versa, that the investigation could compromise the civil cases.
No, no, these actions have a separate status, a separate entity. These actions are civil actions that are being taken on behalf of injured parties. The guards are investigating what transpired in Krislaw with a view to determining whether criminal offences were perpetrated by any of the interested parties. There's also an investigation, as you know, underway that has been conducted by the regulator of substances that are volatile and dangerous. And there is also an investigation being conducted by the HSA, that's the Health and Safety Authority, on the basis that this venue was a workplace. So all of those investigations are underway. Now, they're already more than 2 years old. How long more are they going to last? And, you know, there are time limits impacting on the people for whom we act. Applications must be made within 2 years of the occurrence of the event giving rise to the action. So they couldn't afford, they didn't have the facility or the liberty to wait until their guards eventually produce a report indicating what transpired. Now, you'll recall that recently, in the context of an investigation that was set in train in relation to Michael Lowry and his involvement or not in the events that are very well known about in Ireland, it took the guards 14 and a half years to finalise that investigation. And it was only recently that they submitted a file to the DPP after 14 and a half years. Now, the people in Krislaw don't have that facility. They don't have the capacity to wait that long, nor will they. If they didn't file claims within the two-year time limit, they were out of time.
You mentioned earlier that there will be significant discovery of documents here. Do you believe that some documents may come to the fore in these cases that will shed some light on this? You have been backing the families and others, obviously, in their calls for an inquiry. Could this be the start of documentation appearing that would be pivotal in such an inquiry?
Undoubtedly. Undoubtedly. I mean, there's a vacuum in terms of information. There's a vacuum in terms of explanation as to what caused this tragedy. This is one of the biggest single tragedies resulting in loss of life ever in the state. And it is entirely unacceptable and entirely unsatisfactory that in terms of the performance of the state and its agencies, that they should preside over such a vacuum of information. That is entirely unsatisfactory. And information should be forthcoming. I mean, we get bits of information which is drip-fed to the media. This person has been investigated, this person has been arrested, or the other person has been arrested and has been released. That's the entirety of the information that has been forthcoming in relation to this enormous tragedy. And, you know, it is high time that some explanations were forthcoming, or at the very minimum, that some indication is given as to how long the Gartha investigation will take, how long the other two investigations, and how long the other two investigations will take. It's high time that this kind of information was forthcoming. And as long as you have a vacuum, you have rumour and counter-rumour. But talking about rumour, all of the indications are, on the basis of informed comment, that this explosion was caused by gas and that it was caused as a consequence of a ill-fitting gas equipment on the site. There are the indications that are coming out from informed sources at the moment. We need to know. And we need some information as to how long these investigations are going to take. You can't leave it indefinite. You cannot leave matters of this nature on the long finger where they don't know when an investigation is going to be concluded. And I mentioned earlier in relation to the Lowry matter, it took them 14 and a half, took the guards 14 and a half years to prepare a report and to submit that report to the DPP. Are we facing the same kind of delay in this case? And on the question of delay, given that this was the biggest single tragedy, mass tragedy that resulted in so many deaths and so many catastrophic injuries, the state owe it to the people in Chrislam who suffered the loss of loved ones and who suffered catastrophic injuries. The state owes it to them to set up an inquiry of a kind that will produce answers. And so far, the state have been hiding behind the fact that there's a Garda investigation underway, that there's an investigation underway by the body that controls volatile materials and substances, and that there is an investigation underway by the HSA. The state is hiding behind the fact that those investigations are underway. That's not satisfactory. That's not satisfactory, given that those investigations are taking so long to produce answers or information.
Damien Tansey, thank you very much indeed. This is the 9-3 Noon Show on Highland Radio. You may have heard, if you were listening to the news over the weekend, that there was a very worrying incident around the Brandywell on Friday night. A match was taking place between Derry City and Bohemians. There were violent scenes on Leckie Road and Lone Moor Road. And there were more clashes after the game. Video footage circulated online showing a young girl crying and being consoled by her father. And that was just one of a number of images which have been described as very distressing that emerged over the course of the past 48 hours. Joined on the line by Councillor Aisling Hutton, who is from the Brandywell, represents that area on Derry City and Strabane District Council. Aisling, good morning.
Good morning.
Aisling, you issued a statement yesterday saying that the scenes that were witnessed around the Brandywell on Friday night were horrific.
Yeah, they were. I think that the violence, the disgraceful violence that unfolded there on Friday night was absolutely terrifying for local residents, for other people that were attending the football match, for local businesses in the area. It was something that was disgraceful. Masked youths with weapons running about the area, damaging property and particularly hurting each other. I don't think that they think of the consequence of this type of behaviour, that someone could actually be very seriously injured or hurt and or killed. Two people actually did need hospital treatment. And as far as we know, it was a pre-arranged attack. The Bohemian fans, they come in with a clear mindset. They caused trouble. And it was absolutely terrifying what people witnessed on the streets of the Brandywell and the Bogside on Friday evening.
I've been working on this radio station for the guts of 35 years. I think this is the first time I can actually remember covering a story like this of violence of that scale in the vicinity of the Brandywell. I can't remember anything like that over the course of the past 3.5 decades.
Yeah, you're 100% right, Donal. This is not something that represents the people nor the community spirit of the Brandywell and the Bogside. This area is an area that has come through hardship through the years. It has built itself up to be the most amazing community with lots of positive events going on, a lot of community organisation and activists who come to work every day to make the community better, but also the residents of the area. They're very proud of where they live. They're very proud that the Ryan McBride Brandywell Stadium is in the heart of their community. They've been supportive of that all of their lives, and it is really disheartening to see that behaviour on Friday night. But what we all need to do is ensure that the good work, the good positive community spirit and activism is not dulled by this type of behaviour. It's not, everyone is condemning the behaviour. It's not something that people are going to put up with. But we can't focus on the negative stuff in society. We have to focus on the positive things. And I think that everybody working together and sitting around the table to ensure that this doesn't happen again is of the utmost importance.
The BSNI have made it clear that they believe this was prearranged. When they say prearranged, do you believe that that involves an element of, to use sort of words we know from films in the past and so on, that a firm at Bohemians would have made contact with a firm in Derry and they'll have arranged a meeting at Lonemore Road or Lecky Road or wherever? Is that the situation we're facing here, where two groups made a prearranged note to have a fight? Or do you believe that people came specifically from Dublin to cause trouble without any involvement in the arrangement per se from the Derry side?
Well, the police are saying that it was a prearranged attack, so they obviously have some information in relation to that. But most of this stuff does go on online. So I am not 100% sure about the arrangements in relation to the attack. But what I do know is that it was sprung on the local community. There were residents on the street screaming and crying. There were children who were severely distressed in relation to it. It was something that came on those streets on Friday evening and no one was expecting it. I have been talking to parents, I've been talking to local residents who live local to the grounds. Their homes actually face onto the grounds, and what their children witnessed on Friday evening is something that we never want to see them witnessing again. There was mothers on the street screaming and crying. There were people at the Foyle Cup on Saturday who were actually coming up to me at the match and saying, you know, Our club was at the match as a celebration for the children completing the Foyle Cup, and what they had to witness afterwards was absolutely disgraceful. Children asking questions about why this happened. That shouldn't be happening in today's society. So whether it was planned attack or not, it's not acceptable, Donal. So we just need to obviously get our heads together and ensure that this doesn't happen again, and ensure that there's a bit of support there as well for the football clubs, because it's not all the fans. It was these so-called supporters that were causing this violence. But I suppose coming together and ensuring that there's support there for Derry City as well. They're a great club. They do not want to see this type of behaviour seeping into Irish football. They're a club who support their community day in and day out, and they're very active in their community. So it's really important that we all sit down together and ensure that this doesn't happen again.
And that reference to the Foyle Cup there is very a positive one, because the Foyle Cup, again, it's been a huge success, has been for absolutely years, one of the big events on the summer calendar within Derry. And certainly, I know, for instance, I mean, there were teams staying here in Donegal. I saw teams boarding buses to go to matches from hotels in Donegal. I mean, you know, the level of involvement in the Foyle Cup has been huge. And it's an awful thing to contemplate that after the success of that competition, that the last thing on people's minds before leaving will have been what happened on Friday.
Yeah, 100%. And the Foyle Cup is testament to what does happen in this city. It's a city that welcomes everybody. There's absolutely good relations in everything that we do, but particularly the Foyle Cup, how it brought everybody together. And for children to go to a football match with their parents, they celebrate their achievements at the end of that Foyle Cup, and they come out and see Land Rovers, masked youths with weapons, was absolutely disgraceful. But as a member of this community and living in this community most of my life, I won't allow that to dull the good work that is being done. We can't dull the good relations work that has taken place over the years. We can't dull the programmes that have been planned now over the summer months, the FELA programme particularly. There's a lot of great stuff happening within these communities, and it's up to us to ensure that they are always at the forefront. We won't allow negativity like this to dampen or dull any of the good work that's done on a yearly basis. It's actually done day and daily throughout the community. Lots of good things happening, lots of stuff for young people to progress. So the Foyle Cup is one thing, but the local stuff that happens here within the Bogside and the Brandywell is stuff as well that is irreplaceable, and it's much needed for the young people and families.
The Ryan McBride Brandywell Stadium is a major stadium in Irish football. It's a stadium that has a great reputation, I'm sure. It's a stadium that teams relish coming to play in. vital now that over the coming weeks, when there are more matches and there's more away teams coming to Derry and hopefully more away supporters coming as well, that this doesn't in any way compromise that, that we get back to the situation that we've always had where teams came to Derry to play a hard match and team and supporters came to support their team and enjoy what is an absolutely great atmosphere?
Yeah, 100%. And that's where all, everybody needs to come together in relation to the ensuring that this doesn't happen again and ensuring the health and safety of everybody that goes to the ground. And it's also about ensuring the health and safety of away fans travelling as well from Derry. It's the put a stop to this immediately and they tell people that it's not going to be tolerated. This isn't the type of behaviour that we want our young people witnessing. It's not the type of behaviour that football fans should be experiencing or putting out there. So it is really, really important that at this minute in time that everybody comes together, and that's including the PSNI, they ensure that this type of stuff doesn't happen again, and also they send that message that the general public and the residents in these local areas will not be tolerating it as well.
And one of the great things about Irish sport, and we even saw it obviously in the All-Ireland final yesterday, anyone watching the coverage on TV will have seen Donegal fans standing beside Kerry fans. If you go to Celtic Park for a Gaelic football game, you'll get Derry fans beside Donegal fans, beside Armagh fans, beside Tyrone fans, whatever. And you'll also have that in the Ryan McBride Randywell and other football stadiums across the island, where fans will mingle, fans will have a bit of banter before a game, they'll have a bit of banter after the game, but they'll all queue up at the same chip shop, they'll all queue up at the same food van. We don't want to see a situation coming where you've got cordons and you've got fences blocking off an away end and a home end, and you've got police forming lines to separate fans after the game. I mean, that's not a place we want Irish football to go.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, football is about bringing people together. It's about enjoying the game. And the Ryan McBride Brandywell Stadium is an absolutely wonderful facility. The new stand has been built there. We've had a new city site installed where it's more accessible now for people who have visual impairments to go and watch the game. But as I say, you know, we have to ensure that this doesn't happen again, and people can't be put off with this. This was a small minority of so-called football fans who came and disgracefully behaved the way they did on the streets of the Bog and the Brandywell. But it's about the community letting them know that this will not be tolerated, and about us all working together from a council level right through to a PSNI level, community activism level, to ensure that there's measures put in place to protect the community, to protect the people that are going to watch the football. There's young families who go and watch that football match. You don't want your children having the memory of that violence going to a football game, because it would put them off going again. So it's really, really important that this is nipped in the bud at the very offset, for everybody's benefit, including the young men who did partake in that violent behaviour. One of them could have lost their life. One of them could have been very seriously injured. So this is to protect everybody as a whole.
Councillor Aisling Hutton, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. That's Councillor Aisling Hutton.
Thank you, Dono.
Thank you. That's Aisling there speaking to us from the Brandywell. As she said, she's lived in that community most of her life, and those scenes on Friday night, hopefully not something that we witness again. And I'll just repeat, I mean, as I say, I've worked here for the guts of 35 years. I can't recall ever covering a story regarding violence at the Ryan McBride Brandywell Stadium, or the Brandywell as it would have been called over the years. This is the first time I've seen something like that, and hopefully it's also the last. I want to talk to Freddie, who is on the line, been visiting the area for the past 35 years. Freddie, good morning.
Good morning, Don.
Freddie, you're a visitor and you're welcome, and we love having you here. Your most recent visit, however, somewhat blighted by the environment around you. Tell us your story.
Yes, Donald. It's becoming very apparent now that when people, visitors probably, visit beaches, they think it's okay to leave their rubbish behind. I mean, it's all sorts of rubbish, from beer bottles, cans, dirty soiled nappies, dog dirt, and they just seem to think that, you know, someone else will clear this up, and they leave it behind them. And it's quite disgusting, actually, because, I mean, I've come across broken glass on beaches, And, you know, for young children, well, anyone really, you know, the dangers of broken glass on someone's foot.
In your experience, is this a situation that's been worsening over the past while?
It seems to be worse in the summer. Now, we can be here from March until October, and it seems to be worse during the summer months. And the problem is, I think, that once it starts, once someone leaves something, then people think, oh, we can leave rubbish here. And it just piles up. And, I mean, this is on farmers' land. This is a working farm, the path down to Tranarossan Beach.
Yeah.
And why people think it's acceptable to leave rubbish is beyond me. If you bring it with you, you take it home.
A lot of people in this instance, when you have this discussion, will sort of try to deflect blame onto the county council and say, well, there isn't adequate provision of bins, there isn't adequate provision of places to put stuff, so what are people supposed to do with it? And the answer to that, presumably, is you put it in a bag and you bring it back to the car and you dispose of it elsewhere. Is there a need here for a community conversation about things like the provision of bins?
Well, the problem with bins, Donal, is that what you get then is that if the bins aren't emptied regularly, you get a pile-up not only in the bin, but around the bin. And then also you get people leaving stuff which could be their own household waste.
Yeah, that certainly can be a problem. And the problem can be, too, the bin might only require to be emptied once every 3 weeks in November, but it might need to be emptied every day in July, August.
Correct, absolutely, yeah. And as you said, like, I've been coming here 35 years. And, I mean, I can see this problem getting worse over the number of years we have been coming here. Obviously, it's a lot more busy now since COVID and staycation such like. You know, so I don't know what the answer is. But the reason I sent you the photograph was to try and highlight it over the radio waves, you know, to make people think, you know, if they bring something, they can take it back home with them again.
And what sometimes surprises me about this debate is we've had over the past 20, 30 years a huge emphasis on green flags in schools, on the environment, on the dangers of polluting the environment and the importance of keeping the environment clean. And that's become so important in our schools and such a huge part of the curriculum, both within the classroom and without it, that it almost seems like counterintuitive that at a time when children going into adulthood have got far more awareness of the environment, the dumping situation actually appears to be worsening rather than improving.
Absolutely. And I agree with you about the schools. I mean, you know, why is so much emphasis put on an environment that people are a lot more aware about rather than maybe beaches that maybe not everyone goes to, but the people that do go to the beaches sometimes treat them with total contempt. You know, someone else will pick it up.
Yeah. It can be a difficult
like,
one.
Know, yeah, and like, you know, if you take a leg of Tranarossan Beach, it's a beautiful beach, beautiful setting, and the farmer gives the right of way to go from the car park down to the beach. And then there's this total disregard for the beach and the farmland.
And the worry then becomes, will the farmer at some point decide, well, I want to limit access to the beach because this is proving to be more hassle than it's worth?
That's correct. That could happen very easily. And he would be quite right to do that.
Freddie, thank you very much indeed for the call. It's one that hopefully people will listen to and heed. But certainly as a visitor to the county, it's distressing to hear that situation is worsening because, as we say, there's never been as much public highlighting of it. It never been as much education about this in schools. And the fact that this still seems to be going on and actually worsening is a bit depressing. But Freddie, thank you indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you, Donald, for highlighting this issue.
Absolutely. And that photograph Freddie referenced there, he did send it to us. We'll put it up on our social media. But it's bags of rubbish leaning up against the fence at Tráthnóna Rosin. And as he said, it is very obviously dumped. There is not a bin in the area. It's not as though this is an overflowing bin. This is just stuff that's been left leaning up against a fence. And from that point of view, it's distressing indeed to look at. Now, going to move on. Back to the health issue. I want to go to line two and say good morning to Rosina Toner. Rosina, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well indeed. Now, many people will have heard Rosina on Highland Radio over the past number of months. Rosina has been leading a very effective campaign for improved cancer services at Letterkenny University Hospital and has led a number of protests outside the hospital, which have been getting bigger and bigger. Now, Rosina, we know that you met as recently as last week with Sean Murphy and Dermot Monaghan at Letterkenny University Hospital, and your reaction to the announcement from Minister Carl McNeill today.
Yeah, so last Tuesday, myself, Betty, Mary Orr and Noel Duddy had a meeting with Sean Murphy, Tony Canavan and Professor Michael Cairns from Galway. It was a highly charged meeting, so it was, because we had felt that in previous meetings, they did the talking, we did the listening, they said the same things over and over again. We left there not knowing where were we any further forward. Last week's meeting took a completely different turn. Things got said, I got a wee bit emotional, and I think we were really listened to. So we left there and we just thought, right, well, we have now done our very best in there today. We did the talking. So then on Wednesday, I happened to be in the day unit. And as I was sitting waiting to see Dr. Maria, the door opened and then came Sean Murphy, Dermot Monaghan, and five or six men and women, you know, all in suits. And I kind of was sitting there. Sean Murphy gave me a wee nod, I nodded back, and they looked through, stopped at the room where the chemotherapy is given, and they walked on. Then they came back and Sean said, I want to introduce you to these people, Rosina. And I was just like, brilliant. So they were there from HSE. They were sent up to look at the hospital, see where it needed upgrading, see for themselves how badly it was. And when I did get talking to them, and no better place than to do it than in the day unit, I said to him, like, you can see for yourself in here what it's like. You can see this building is not fit for purpose and it needs to be upgraded and we need bigger services. And he nodded away at his head and said, yeah, yeah. And then they left. And I was chatting to Dermot then briefly and he said that, like, they thought that they were coming but they weren't sure when, and so they couldn't tell us on Tuesday that, which was fair enough. So I was just delighted to be in the right place at the right time, really.
Yeah. Now, Minister Carl McNeill told us this morning, you'll have heard, that she can't put a precise timeline on the development of this new two-ward surgical hub and also the 15 new improved oncology chairs. But she said she would certainly expect it to be up and running within 2 years.
Yeah. I'm just delighted because, really, for there to be 15 new chairs, there would have to be an ambulatory care centre to put them in, because in the unit as it is, there is no physical space for 15 new chairs. So I am over the moon this morning with all this news, the surgical hub, that there's going to be an expansion to the day unit, which makes me believe that that means there's going to be an ambulatory care centre. And as she said at the end of her interview, that she is now giving this all the go-ahead, so it is now up to the hospital management, Tony Canavan, to get the plans, the business plans, whatever it is they need doing, get it done. Do not lie down now and wait for 6 months. Get up and get it done. Start tomorrow.
Yeah. You obviously, Rosina, have had many discussions with politicians, with doctors, and there's been a lot of talk this morning about the importance of the doctors and the politicians and others. But I think it's only right that the input into this of campaigners like yourself, like Betty Holmes, like Noel Duddy, and others who have been, you know, running those campaigns and holding the meetings and having the discussions and putting the pressure on the politicians, the doctors and the hospital management, that does need to be acknowledged as well. And I think you, like many others, can take some satisfaction that you've played a part in getting to this decision today.
Yeah, And I am so, like, I just couldn't believe it this morning. I really couldn't. Like, it was just the best news to wake up to, like, after yesterday. It was brilliant. And at the last meeting we had, in the hospital, which was the 25th or 26th of April, in that meeting was Padraig McGoughlin, Charles Ward, Charlie McConnell, Patrick Coke Gallagher, Pierce Doherty. And in that meeting, those politicians all put aside their political parties and they all worked together as Donegal men for Donegal. And I believe, like, when they left that meeting, they seen through that. And I am so delighted that they did. They stood together for Donegal. It really didn't matter what political their political agendas were. And that's what we needed. We needed everyone on the same page. So the advocates, the politicians, then the doctors all got on board for the surgical hub because they knew what they were talking about then. Like, I backed them 100%, but I didn't know anything about the surgical hub. My fight was the cancer. So I had to just stick to my fight then. But I'm just so excited this morning that everything has come together for everyone who has been for months or years fighting for it because it's so well deserved and Letterkenny so badly needs it. It's just brilliant.
Rosina, thank you very much indeed. And it's great to hear that you're happy with the announcement as well. Thank you, Rosina, and have a great day. I just want to, before we go for a break in the headlines, I just want to just remind you very briefly what exactly has been announced today for Donegal in the information piece that we've had from the Health Minister this morning. Letterkenny University Hospital will see the development of a new two-theatre surgical hub beside the existing hospital building, along with the addition of 30 ambulatory day oncology chairs, 15 of them new and 15 replacement. This dual investment, the Minister says, will enhance both surgical and cancer treatment services in Donegal. The design of the new hub will allow for future expansion, addressing the long-term need for additional bed capacity in the region. And to support this, a full development control plan for the Letterkenny University Hospital site will be commissioned to guide the sequencing of future developments. The HSE will proceed with the development of planning applications for both sites, that's Letterkenny and Sligo, engaging with local authorities. They'll be prepared in parallel, ensuring a coordinated and efficient rollout of these critical healthcare projects. That's what the Minister had to say in her statement this morning.